This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. And you know, you can listen to The Takeaway anytime by subscribing to our podcast. You can find that on our website, thetakeaway.org, or on iTunes.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates says he's ready to increase the size of the U.S. Army.
I am announcing a decision to temporarily increase the active duty in strength of the Army by up to 22,000. That is a temporary increase from the current authorized and permanent in strength of 547,000 to an authorized temporary in strength of 569,000 active duty soldiers.
Some of these troops might end up in Afghanistan. Is it enough? That's coming up on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, July 21st. I'm Farai Chidea here with Lynn Scher. We're filling in for John Hockenberry. Morning, Lynn.
Morning, Farai. Nice to be with you.
Absolutely. On the show today, we're going to break down the healthcare debate and find out what the possible changes are going to mean for your health and your bank account. And speaking of banks, you've heard about multi-billion dollar profits for the super banks. This morning, we're going to hear from a community banker and see how the smaller banks are doing. Also, more peril in Afghanistan. We'll take a deeper look now with Jill McGivering, BBC correspondent specializing in Asia. She joins us from London. There's a lot of news coming out of Afghanistan. Jill, you're monitoring all of it. What's been happening in the past 24 hours?
I'm afraid it's been bloody. A series of casualties, roadside bombs, and just recently today, attacks on government buildings in the east of the country. It's all evidence of this violence worsening in the country as Afghanistan heads toward elections next month.
Well, Jill, stay with us. We are going to talk to you soon. That's, again, Jill McGivering of the BBC. Now we have more on the headlines. President Obama steps up his push for major health care change. He's going to meet with key House Democrats for his plan. He'll give a speech on his health care agenda. And California has a deal to close its massive budget gap. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and top state lawmakers have a plan to close a $26 billion shortfall. They'll make up the rest of the deficit through borrowing and shifting money around.
Federal Reserve Chair Ben Bernanke testifies on the Hill later this morning. This as possible signs of economic recovery appear. Lawmakers will want to know whether the economy is definitely improving. Our partner, the New York Times, reports a government agency covered up research on the dangers of driving while using mobile phones. A former federal safety chief says transit officials told him to bury the findings because the data would anger Congress.
And Pakistan's military says more than 50 militants are dead after 2 days of tough fighting in the country's volatile northwest. A few soldiers are dead also.
NASA says Jupiter has taken a hit, maybe from a comet. New images show a scar in the atmosphere. NASA turned its lens on the planet after a tip from an amateur astronomer.
Now we go to the markets. Wall Street gained more than 1% yesterday. Dow starts trading at 88.48, S&P at 9.51, an eight-month high. The NASDAQ kicks off at 19.09. Washington's working furiously in the healthcare debate, how to pay for it, but what shouldn't be on the table? What's a deal breaker in your mind? Taxing the wealthy? Covering abortion? Tell us what you don't think should be on the table. 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Lynn Scher here with Farai Chidea. We're in for John Hockenberry. Escalation in Afghanistan. Today there have been Taliban attacks on two eastern cities in Afghanistan. The main one was in the city of Gardez. Taliban militants dressed as women and wearing burqas tried to set off explosives but were shot before they could do so. There's been considerable bloodshed. The Associated Press reporting that a total of 13 Taliban militants and Afghan security forces have died in the attacks in both cities. To get a sense of how our partners, the BBC, are reporting this story this morning, we turn to the BBC's reporter in London and a friend of The Takeaway, Jill McGivern. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
As we've heard, a terrible attack on eastern cities. Gardez seems to be the worst. Women's clothing. What do you know about this?
That's right. Yes, it seems as though these were male suicide bombers, but dressed as women in those all-encompassing burqas, which is a tactic that has been used before, partly, of course, because they are so voluminous and they cover any kind of suicide vest quite effectively, but also partly because of the cultural sensitivities. It is difficult for male guards, for example, to approach women who are wearing the burqa. To search them, of course, is very difficult. It requires women being available to do that, and often they're not available. So it's one of those things that is quite easy to do, very difficult to go against, as with suicide bombing itself.
And it looks as if they were coordinated attacks, is that correct?
That certainly seems to be the case, yes. It seems to have been a series of coordinated blasts. Again, it seems to be just with this surge in violence we've been seeing quite recently, there have been quite a few hallmarks of the kind of violence, the kind of patterns we used to see quite often in Iraq a few years ago. And I think those kind of coordinated attacks increasingly happening now in Afghanistan is another indication of that.
Well, obviously also coming off of the death of the four American troops, the deaths of the four American troops on Monday. This, we keep saying this has been a brutal month, this has been a bloody month for Afghanistan, but is it indeed an escalation or is it business as usual?
I think there's no doubt that the level of casualties we are seeing is greater than we've seen pretty much since 2001, and it's causing enormous concern. It's causing, of course, political and humanitarian concern back home for the countries that are involved in sending most of the troops there. And, of course, it's very destabilizing for Afghanistan itself. I was in Helmand just 6 months ago meeting ordinary folk there and trying to get a sense from them about some of the positives in terms of development and so on. There is a lot of development work being done, a lot of money being poured into Afghanistan. But everybody I was meeting was saying, you know, never mind about the schools and the clinics and things. We haven't got security yet. Until we have security, you guys aren't safe, but we're not safe either. We can't live our lives normally. And I think that's part of the whole destabilization that's going on in the run-up to the elections.
And what are the strains on the coalition at this point? Is there a danger of it falling apart?
I think there's certainly concern. We're hearing comments from the Secretary General of NATO at the moment, who's in London, talking about the fact that NATO cannot afford to walk away from Afghanistan at this time, saying, look, the cost would be too great, particularly in terms of possible attacks in the West. But there are clearly tensions within NATO. There are some countries saying, look, we, like the United States and the second biggest contingent, Britain as well, we are contributing a lot of the people and we are seeing a lot of the casualties, not the only ones, but we're bearing a lot of this burden. And I think that's part of the whole debate going on at the moment about some countries which are part of NATO, which may indeed have a presence there. 42 countries have soldiers in Afghanistan, but they may be doing some of the less dangerous stuff, like getting involved in training perhaps, but they have definite caveats, definite limits on what they will and won't do. And that's causing some resentment, clearly.
Jill McGivern with the BBC in London for that update on Afghanistan. We thank you very much. And continuing with our look at the war in Afghanistan, we're going to focus now on the prisons there, specifically the U.S.-run Bagram prison. Its reputation is daunting. Reports of abuse have been well documented. Just for example, two Afghan detainees died there in 2002 after being beaten by American soldiers and hung by their arms from the ceiling of isolation cells. Now, the U.S. military review calls for an overhaul of Bagram to separate extremist prisoners from the general population, to start training programs for life beyond bars. One major motivation? Concern that abuses and militancy inside its walls are helping strengthen the Taliban. So is this move good for detainees, or is it just good public relations? To help answer that question, we turn to Jonathan Hafitz. He's an attorney in the National Security Project at the ACLU, who's represented detainees from Iraq and Bagram and Guantanamo. And he joins us here in our studio. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Pentagon has commissioned this report to be released later today to review all of the detention issues in Afghanistan. Is this, in fact, good news for the detainees?
Well, it could be. Certainly the fact that the Defense Department is taking a hard look at detention operations could be a positive sign, but the devil will be in the details in terms of the recommendations it makes and the steps it takes to reform U.S. detention operations.
Start with this very simplest one, or one simplest for us to understand, the idea of separating out the extremists in the prison from the general population, for perhaps people arrested for different crimes, not terrorism, or less extreme forms of terrorism, and then training. Isn't this – this seems reasonably understandable.
I mean, these sound like positive steps, separating prisoners out and providing training to different prisoners. But what I've not seen mentioned, and one thing we're really going to be looking for, is any reforms in terms of the process that's afforded detainees to determine whether or not we're holding the right people. A district judge has ruled in a case this spring that the process that's used at Bagram is inadequate. It's worse even than the process that was used at Guantanamo, which the Supreme Court ruled was unconstitutional. So I don't think we really have any confidence that we're holding the right people at Bagram.
Jonathan Hafitz from the ACLU is talking about this prison situation at Bagram. What about Americans concerned about terrorism? What about Americans who are saying, oh, if you release all those prisoners, they may join the Taliban, they may join al-Qaeda, whatever?
Well, I think it's important to understand, and we've seen this in Iraq, that arbitrary detention, sweeps of people, including people from their home, which constitutes a lot of the people at Bagram, does not help American security, but harms it. It breeds a lot of unhappiness and anger in the population if people are being taken away, locked up, often for many years without a fair hearing, and this undermines American security and stability. So a sound, rights-respecting detention process where people are given a fair hearing and not held for years without charge will help American troops do their job.
Jonathan, it's Farai here. What about the politics of this? Some people who voted for Barack Obama back when he was a senator and candidate thought that he would come in and completely change the detention policies. What are you seeing from the White House?
Well, we're seeing, unfortunately, a lot more continuity than change. For example, the United States has continued to defend not just holding people at Bagram, but capturing people from anywhere in the world, places as far as Thailand or the Middle East, and bringing them to Bagram and holding them without judicial review. We've also seen the administration appearing to endorse a system of indefinite, prolonged, potentially lifelong detention without charge, including for detainees at Guantanamo.
Jonathan Hafitz from the ACLU. This review is not only of Bagram, but it's of the entire prison system in Afghanistan. Is this realistic in a country where their sense of a judicial system is very different from ours? Can we make it happen? Can they make it happen?
I think it's important for both countries to be involved. The U.S. is obviously actively involved in Afghanistan, including in holding prisoners. But it's a good point. The Afghan system also it needs to be fair, and it's important that the United States build and help reconstruct a valid and legal system to function in Afghanistan.
How bad is Bagram? Is it Abu Ghraib all over again? Is it Guantanamo? How should we understand this?
Bagram has largely been under the radar, so the fact there hasn't been a lot of attention paid to it in many ways helps us understand why conditions there have been so bad. Some of the worst abuses in the entire so-called war on terror have been carried out at Bagram, physical abuses that's led to the death and injury of many prisoners. So Bagram is a very bad place, and the fact that there's so much secrecy around it has only hurt and not helped bring reforms.
Remind us, 600 prisoners, is that correct, in Bagram?
Approximately 600 as far as we know. And we filed a Freedom of Information Act request to try to find out information about the prisoners, their treatment, and the opportunity they're being given to challenge their detention. And regrettably, the Defense Department has denied our request, saying it's not a sufficiently important public matter, which is going to force us to bring litigation to get the information to the American people and to the world about what's actually happening inside of Bagram.
And that report is expected, is it later today or tomorrow? Later today, right?
The government's report, but we're seeking, a broad range of information about Bagram to provide to the American public.
But we will be looking at that report when it comes out to see what the specifics are. Jonathan Hafitz, attorney with the ACLU's National Security Project, thanks very much for helping us.
And Lynn, coming up later in the show, the global growth of a new kind of illegal drug, What makes it so dangerous? We're talking about fake medications.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MYTAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.